Welcome to the Scrum.org Community Podcast, a podcast from the home of Scrum. In this podcast, we feature professional Scrum trainers and other Scrum practitioners sharing their stories and experiences to help learn from the experience of others. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, everyone. I'm Ryan Ripley with Agile for Humans and professional Scrum trainer with Scrum.org. I'm stepping in as a guest host for episodes highlighting the experiences of other Scrum.org professional Scrum trainers. I hope you enjoy getting to know these amazing people. Welcome to another episode of Becoming a Scrum Master. I'm your host, Ryan Ripley. Joining me today, I would say good friend and colleague. We were colleagues as stewards at one point, right?
That's right,
Mr. John Coleman. John, how have you been?
Great. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
Of course. Glad you're here. John, I'm going to jump right into it. Of course, you're a fellow PST with Scrum.org, but before that, definitely a Scrum Master. And so this is all about becoming a Scrum Master. A lot of people want to know the origin stories and our advice and tips. And so I've got five different questions to frame that out. And I think we'll just get into it. So can you share the story of how you first encountered Scrum and what motivated you to take that next step and actually become a Scrum Master?
Thanks, Ryan. I was in a factory in Ireland. That's where I'm from originally. And it was a very big factory. There was a supply chain of 10,000 people. And I was working in a supplier as part of that supply chain. And we were kind of a critical supplier. And the dogs in the street knew that there was a new factory being built in Poland, but we weren't supposed to know. It was supposed to be a big secret. The general manager of the factory came to me and he said, John, I was an IT manager there, and he said, John, I need you to increase the capacity of the factory by 40%, and you've got 4 months and no floor space to work with. I said, thank you, Joe. Joe was the guy's name, Joe Kavanagh. And we were struggling with even small changes. So because we had a lean program and they had all these continuous improvement initiatives, and even a small change was taken 9 months to get through because we had lots of queues. And so I knew I was in trouble, Ryan. So I went over to get trained by Ken Schwaber in London, biggest Scrum Master class I've ever seen. I think there were 15 tables. I think it was at a table of 10.
Wow.
Roman Pitcher was there as well. And there was another UK trainer there as well. His name isn't coming to me right now. And I learned all about Scrum, went back and destroyed the factory in Ireland. Joking. It was a good ending.
Yeah. that's quite a class to be in. And learning it straight from Ken. I was fortunate enough to get into a class with Ken while he was still teaching. And it is quite the experience. So
it is. And it was like I had been reading about Scrum for a while, you know, and I'd heard about extreme programming a few years before. And here I was in this kind of impossible situation. I felt like I was going to get fired one way or the other. So I might as well give it a go, you know. And so I went for it. And we were actually very successful with it. It was so successful that when they were just someone decided to put another system in at the same time that was dependent on our system going in, and it was going live 2 days later, and we had to think, oh, what if they go live? What if they roll back? What if we roll back? I had to think of all these situations, and then their initiative was running in trouble, so we used Scrum to recover that as well. So it was actually double trouble, you know. It was really good. So that was like a really fresh moment for me. And I said, okay, I was a project manager as well at that point, but I was kind of like one of the worst project managers in the world because, you know, I was, you know, the changes would come in and I'd say life changes, business changes, it's okay, bring it in, it's fine, I'll figure out a way to swap things around and just change control for more money, you know. But it was probably the right time for me to move on, I think, to something different.
So I mean, you've crafted this wonderful story, so I have to ask, did the factory survive or did it all move to Poland?
The factories in Poland and some of the funny stories that I still tell in my training, some sticker on a bin is still in Poland as well. not much changed. I mean, they changed a lot, obviously, since then because there's been progress. But in terms of the design that we put in, I understand it's still there. So
wonderful.
But they moved the whole thing. But we managed to survive another day. But yeah, okay. The factory had to move on, but at least they had more production for the time that it was still in Ireland, you know? So Ireland didn't let the side down. Let's put it that way.
Nice.
So this question might bleed into the previous one, and maybe you've already answered this, but, you know, I also like to ask about specific situations where there might have been a eureka or light bulb moment, you know, something that showed the true power and potential of Scrum. I think the story you told is a great example. But if you have another one, you know, just that experience where you just sat back and went, all right, I can never go back to the way I used to work because this was too good. Like this moment here, I want this forever. You know what I mean?
Yeah, in that very first initiative, we were, it was 4 months of work, and 2 months in, there was a piece of work that we thought might only be 2 days of work, and we discovered it would take maybe 2 months.
Wow.
That was going to blow us out of the water. That meant that everything was going to be late. It was going to cause huge problems. And we looked at it, and the power of goals, the sprint goal in Scrum, it's a very religious word, sacrosanct. You cannot change it. Sounds very strict and unhelpful, but actually it was very helpful because it crystallizes the mind. And we had this part that had two serial numbers, and we thought it was an axiom of supply chain, one part, one serial number. We would have had to change the whole backend system for really no business value. So I don't know what inspired me to ask this, Ryan, but I went to the product owner and I said, we don't have any technical solution within the sprint to do this. I said, do you have any business solution? And she said, I do. I said, what is it? She said, put a paper sticker on the bin. I said, what? You don't want me to change the computer screen? No, put a paper sticker on the bin. So when they pick that part, they know what to do. And we'll instruct the line supervisors. Really? That'll satisfy the sprint goal? Are you serious? She said, yeah. If I knew it was going to be 2 months, I wouldn't ask for it. Okay. So that was interesting. It's like that was the power of outcomes over outputs there, where there was a focus about what are we trying to achieve here? And I mean, in the old fashioned way, we probably would have dug our heels in maybe for 2 months trying to figure it out, and then we'd be late, right? So that was a big moment.
That's huge. That collaboration between the business and tech, it just, you know, what amazes me, John, and I'm sure you've seen this too, is that, I mean, I've been cracking at this now for, how old am I? 25 years? And it still feels like there's a divide, right? And the only times I've ever seen it squeeze together and sort out is in some sort of Scrum context. I think Kanban teams do a pretty nice job with it too, but same types of principles of, you know, collaboration, cross-functional. And I think a lot of that carries, even though the Kanban folks, we don't always admit that some of the Scrum thinking has bled in, and the Scrum thinkers don't always admit that Kanban has kind of snuck in. But, you know, outside of those ideas, it just feels like that divide is still very present, you know, and that just amazes me sometimes that we haven't squeezed that in all too much.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Ryan, because something that I've noticed as well, I think something that might be increasing the divides would be maybe sometimes Scrum Masters can be a little bit too strict with, well, I'm probably saying it the wrong way. They're being too obvious about you have to do this because this is what Scrum says, you have to do this because that's, and the secret really is how can you make your Scrum look fluid? We're focusing more on the product and the value than the process. I mean, don't get me wrong, we still do everything we need to do, but the real magic is when it's happening, but it's like nobody notices that it's happening. It's just natural for everybody. It's, of course, we're going to get together and work as a team and head in a direction towards some product goal and take one step at a time and deliver one sprint goal after another, and we'll discover surprises along the way, but we work together and we build trust as a team, and we deal with these complex situations. And I think people forget that sometimes, that, you know, when they're having all these kind of wars, battles, so to speak, we kind of get a little bit lost. And I think we should all remember that we do really need to come across as helping and not being kind of not getting in the way, if you know what I mean.
You know, I remember a very distinct moment of frustration, and you've worked with me enough to know that sometimes in my frustration, I will just shoot something out of my mouth and wish I could pull it back. Someone turned to me and used that phrase that you use. They said, well, Scrum says, and I turned to them, I just fired right back. And I've never seen a PDF talk, knock it off. And, you know, Scrum doesn't say anything. It's silent on almost everything that people want it to speak to. And it just amazes me. But yeah, I think you're right. The idea that we're here to help rather than be right or be correct or be dogmatic or fill in the other terms hasn't really. Yeah. That helpful mindset would certainly go much further.
I think so. And I think a lot of the maybe misperceptions that people have about Scrum is because they've been learning something different. I'm sure you've happened to you as well. You might even have someone coming into an advanced Scrum Masterclass PSM2. They might have been trained a few years ago, thought they were doing Scrum for several years, and they find out during the class they weren't doing Scrum at all, you know, and they were probably saying, oh, this doesn't work or whatever. But you know what? It's actually really simple. There's hardly any must-have things in the Scrum Guide, actually. And if you've got a really good Scrum Master supporting you, it'll just feel natural. That's the way it should be, right?
Oh, and speaking of perceptions, you know, the way that the Scrum Master, we have role here, but accountabilities, however you want to place it. How has your perception and execution of the Scrum Master accountabilities evolved over time?
Yeah, it's the wording has changed a little bit, and some people are uncomfortable with the latest wording. I don't have a problem with the 2020 guide. I think it's absolutely fine. And the way I'm kind of going as well is, I think you could actually interpret particularly the Scrum Master accountability, that does it really have to be somebody? Do we have to have someone who's not in the organization? Do we have to create a new person for that? I'm going to say something a bit odd here now, but in the LESS community, for example, we don't have a big problem with managers. They even have an optional role for managers over there because they think they can fix problems and get things out of the way. They can help Scrum Masters to fix things, which begs the question then, could a manager be a Scrum Master? And I'm kind of in the camp that they could, you know. You have to be careful, of course. You want to foster the self-management, and you don't want people, you know, to feel like they're controlled or something like that. But actually, I've seen really good agile leaders being the manager and the Scrum Master for a team. I've also seen situations where, let's say, Ryan, you're my line manager. You know, a lot of the time I might say, well, I hope you're a Scrum Master for a different team. You know what I mean? But I have seen situations, you know, just so I can still self-manage, you know what I mean? Because you're looking after my pay review and all that. But I've seen situations where even where it was the same person, manager, Scrum Master, and it actually wasn't a problem because we were fluid. It all comes back to not kind of overcooking this thing, that it's we're just trying to work together to figure out how we're going to do this thing. And somebody's worried about the value. Somebody's worried about the effectiveness of the team. And somebody's worried about quality. And together, we're all trying to make things better. And I really like the way Scrum.org have moved the needle as well in terms of merging with other approaches. You mentioned the influence of Kanban. So we're less fussy now about how you size your work, for example. And Lean UX is that we have a Lean UX class, a Scrum with Lean UX class, which I think is amazing because there's lots of talk about what percentage of your backlog is really actually used by users and customers, and you could actually get rid of a lot of those if for some items where you've got the customers banging the door down, you just build those. But for the items where you're not really sure you can harvest the value, you can now use Scrum with Lean UX, and Scrum.org are like right there with this. And I think it's really cool that we've got discovery to delivery within the Scrum house. And now we've got Scrum with Kanban, and we've got lots of variety as well, haven't we? We got people who are good at DevOps, some good with executives, you know, at scaling, all sorts. It's a really healthy, nice community.
It is. I mean, it's certainly a great group of diverse thoughts and mindsets, right? And sometimes it gets a little messy, but what I like about the group is that we always clean it up pretty quick, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
So, very good. I think we'll move into advice. You know, I know sometimes advice is a dirty word, but in this case, we're going to encourage it. What advice would you give someone who is aspiring to be a Scrum Master? They haven't started yet, but they're looking at it. They're kicking the tires. They're thinking about it.
Yeah. So this is very interesting because it comes up a lot for me that I often ask people when they come to my training, are you curious? And I'm trying to find out, you know, do they want to go beyond what we normally cover in the class? Is there some extra stuff you want to cover? But really what I'm looking for is, are you a change agent?
Yep.
Are you going to be one of these people who says, you know, yeah, it's awful. Things are terrible here. And slopey shoulders and, you know, just kind of going around. Everything's miserable. Are you a glass half full or a glass half empty kind of person? When we see people having some struggles with using the approaches we're trying to help people with, are you going to be the person who's going to be encouraging people? Are you going to be the person who's actually against the whole thing? So I think the material question is, are you a change agent? Are you willing to be the face of the change on the inside? Because the customer changes from the outside. Are you willing to help managers, people in teams, people in other teams to see another way of working? Okay, you invite people, of course, to change, but the people, once they've said, I want to do this, are you willing to really help them on the hard road? And when things get difficult, are you willing to really, you know, dig deep and help people to get through it? I think that's a really important thing for me. I know it's a bad metaphor, but I sometimes talk about the World Cup football final, you know, Messi and Ronaldo. You've probably heard of these players, and mm-hmm. I say to people, it's a bad metaphor. Metaphors always break down, but I say, imagine a World Cup football final, and the referee says, "Yeah, it's okay. You can all break each other's legs. It's fine. You know, it's okay. You know." What kind of a spectacle would that be? And I'm not saying about the rules. I'm just saying, like, if you're trying to, you know, end up having a good game and basically help the team to deliver really good value, are you willing to make the tough decisions that will help the team to move forward? Are you willing to step in when there's conflict? Are you willing to, the team should self-manage, of course, but are you willing to step in when things get awkward? Are you willing to deal with the questions, the difficult questions that people will ask? Some of them are valid and some of them are more coming from a place where people are resisting, not in a positive way. And how are you going to deal with that? Are you going to be able for that?
Yeah, it's really, are you going to be the champion or the cynic?
Yeah.
Right. And if you're the cynic, this won't be a fun experience for you. So
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I make jokes sometimes about some people being no change agents, as in they've been promoted to some kind of Scrum Master or coach or whatever, but actually they're against the change. And I even call them double agents, you know, but I have a bit of fun about that. I don't, not to their face, of course, but but I'd be thinking it in my mind. You know what I mean?
Defenders of the status quo.
Indeed.
Run into a lot of them, but you know what? At the same time, it's, you know, we get into these conversations about management and leadership. Oh, they don't get it. Oh, they won't listen. And maybe we just haven't said it in a way that makes sense to them. You know, maybe.
Yeah.
I think there are some people out there that just want to see the world burn. But I also wonder if there are a few of these cynics or double agents, and I've called them similar things too, but maybe they're just scared. Maybe they're just worried. It was actually Esther Derby's work who opened me up to a lot of these ideas. Like, I'm not naturally full of empathy, right? So I really have to try hard to think about, well, why would this person be upset or why would they resist? And because normally I'm just like, just do it. It makes sense. Just come on. Let's just do, you know, the very logical, direct, what I think is logical and very direct. And yeah, it's just you meet all sorts of types. And I think to your point, if you are not that positive champion of change, those different personality types and resistance are just going to wear you down.
Yeah. And just on that, I ask people to think about resistance of three types. So you have the genuine person who really cares, because sometimes we can be guilty of saying, oh, they're just putting up a fake wall. There's no wall. They're just resisting. But actually, sometimes there really is a wall. And if we actually understood their business domain, a technical domain, we might say, oh, we don't have 10 tools in the toolbox. We can only use two, maybe even only one. So that's they can be your biggest champions. So I take resistance as a gift sometimes. And then you have the person who always says no. No matter how good the idea is, they'll always say no. And then you'll have the person who says yes to everything, but they won't do anything. They give you lip service, which are the most dangerous people.
Yep.
And I was having a chat with a coach recently, and I was saying, how did one of the colleagues moved on? I said, oh, how's that guy getting on? How's he getting on the new job? Oh, he's having an awful time. Everybody's saying no, 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 no. And they're telling their friends, no, 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 don't do it. And then, you know, this guy. And they said, we think we prefer where we are because, you know, they're all very nice and they don't act like that. And I said, do you know what? I think I prefer to be where he is, because at least they're being honest and they're saying no. I can deal with that. And we can say, okay, maybe I don't need to change in your area. Maybe I can work with someone else who wants to make some change. But when people give you lip service, that's very difficult. So I try to judge people then. Now, judge is the wrong word, but I try to assess based on behavior then rather than words. What are people doing as opposed to what are they saying, you know?
I think that's all great advice for the aspiring Scrum Master. It's not all about the framework and the tech. There's a lot of people reading and a lot of, and you're going to mess a lot of it up, and then you're going to get to apologize and try again. But that's being human, I guess. It's good stuff, though.
It is indeed.
John, I got one more for you.
Sure.
So I know this is a tough one. I think we're all avid readers, and I don't know about you, but I've got a stack of books as tall as I am in my backlog. But what is the one book that every Scrum Master should read? And it doesn't have to be a Scrum book, doesn't have to be an Agile book. But what do you think is the one that, go ahead and grab that right now?
Yeah, is one. I've been doing a lot of research lately on companies, and I've been studying Pixar.
Oh, great.
And there's a book, Creativity Inc., which was refreshed in 2023. And I listened to the update, the audio version. And Ed Catmull did a super job of that. It's a great example of culture gardening, where you're kind of creating the environment where agility and innovation can grow, and responsiveness and empiricism and the human side. He's very, Pixar were very good, still are very good at the human side. And also passing the knowledge on to the next set of leaders. I'm very curious what will happen with Disney. Will Disney kind of stick their claws into Pixar and take the magic away, or will Pixar be allowed to continue? But that book for me was powerful. Another one as well would be Trillion Dollar Coach by Bill Campbell. I thought that was an excellent book as well. Lots of agile books as well. Don Reinertsen, Flow, is a fabulous one.
Yep.
Even for people who are into Scrum, Flow is a big concept now that's kind of supported well in the Scrum Guide. So they'd be probably give you too many now, but
no. I'd even add your work on complexity to that. I think every Scrum Master should be looking at those different ideas and thoughts. You're also a contributor to the Kanban Guide, and there's no reason why a Scrum Master shouldn't know the ins and outs of Kanban as well. And so you've made a lot of contributions in those areas, and I think Scrum Master should definitely be taking a look at your work as well.
Thank you, Ryan, and yours as well. I hope your recent book is doing well, The Evidence-Based Management.
I think people like it. We'll see. If the royalty check is bigger than $1.25, I'll be happy. We'll see how it does, but I appreciate that too. All right, John, we've hit the end of the questions. Thoroughly enjoyed getting to catch up with you. We don't do this enough. Anything you'd like to get in front of the audience before we call it a day?
I think we just need to be nice to each other, and let's try to avoid gaslighting and saying that oh, that community over there are terrible, they're all awful. There are some really good agility coaches, there are some really good scrum masters, there are some really good product managers, product leaders, and let's not be throwing stones at each other. Let's try to work together and see what we can do to make the world better.
Love it. Great. Thank you, John. And I hope we get to do this again soon.